I stumbled on that at 18 years sober, being a regular student of the book. Everything I need to know about how to live a spiritual life is right there. And it talks about step 10 and taking that little inventory beforehand. It says when we retire at night, we review our day. And it talks about constructively reviewing our day, not destructively reviewing our day. And we ask where we've been wrong and what we need to do to right it. And then we ask for forgiveness. What measures be taken? Then we ask God for forgiveness, and then we go to bed. You know what that's called? Putting that day to rest. I'd never known that today. I said, how do you live this day at a time? Well, you put one to bed, and then when you wake up, a new one starts. But I had never known how to put it to bed, so I'd bring it with me. And it'd all clog up. And I couldn't understand why I'd get confused and anxiety-ridden, and sometimes just nothing made sense. It's because I didn't do the steps. I didn't do the exercises. I didn't stop and put that day to bed. There is no softer pillow than a clear conscience. I promise you, you'll sleep deeper than you've ever slept. But I've got to take that daily inventory and constructively review my day. Was I thinking of myself most of the time, or was I thinking what I could pack into the stream of life? I can honestly tell you that 95%+ of my life is spent thinking about you. And I love that. God, I love that. And oddly enough, my life's never been better. Never been better. Now, there's some few areas that need tweaking. And as soon as I surrender them, they'll be good too. They'll be good too. But my life is to be about love and service. It isn't about what am I getting for me and mine. It's about what am I giving. And as a direct result of what I give, I receive. But you can't do it for that purpose, if I understand it correctly. You do it because it's the right thing to do, and what you're giving back is a benefit of what you're doing, but you don't do it for that reason. Otherwise, it's self-serving. I did not come here to talk to you to preserve my sobriety. God's got that taken care of. What I've done is come here to share with you and hope to help you along your journey of sobriety and give back a little of what I've been given. I'm not looking for a payoff. I'm overpaid. Step 11. We had a few conversations with some person. We talked about it. They say, you know, I don't have much of a relationship with God. And I say, well, what spiritual exercises are you doing? They go, well, not much. I ask for help in the morning, thank him at night. So, well, that's kind of the relationship you got, too, isn't it? It kind of works that way. Well, yeah, well, how do I get more? You do more. You actually start the steps, like prayer and meditation. You know, they actually mean that? No, they're serious about it, honest. Surprised the heck out of me. They actually expect you to do that. Now, how do you do that? Well, there's thousands of ways to do it, but 86, 87, 88 will tell you. And there's a lot of wonderful books out there about meditation. I always do a little trick when I do a retreat. I say, let's do a relaxation exercise. Well, in fact, let's do it. We might as well do it. We got time. I want everybody to put their feet flat on the floor, turn around toward the table. Toughest part for a lot of you is I want you to close your eyes. I know. I don't know these people. They don't know you either. Close your eyes. And I just want you to take a minute and calm yourself. And I want you to breathe in through your nose a deep breath, fully and completely, and hold it for a minute. Hold it. Now exhale through your mouth, slowly and completely. Let those shoulders collapse. Push it all out. No short breathing here. Now this time when you breathe in, I want you to envision breathing in that loving, healing God that you wrote down on that piece of paper. That loving, healing God that you have that relationship with. Fill your lungs fully and completely. And when you exhale this time, I want you to exhale any sadnesses you've ever had in your life, fully and completely. Now this time I want you to inhale the loving, healing power of God as you understand Him. Fully and completely feel your body fill with the oxygen and relax. Exhale any sadnesses or shame you've ever had in your life. Inhale the loving, healing power of God in through your nose and out through, in through your nose and hold it. Fully and completely. And exhale through your mouth the loving, healing power of God. At this moment, you are one with your Creator. Don't analyze it, utilize it. I want you to keep your eyes closed and continue slow, deep breathing in through your nose and out through your mouth. And I want you to go on a trip with me. I want each of you to go to a favorite beautiful place you've been to or a place you want to go. It's a place of peace. It's a place of beauty. It's a place of elegance. It's a place that you've always wanted to be. Make it your place. When you get to this place, you see a lounge chair made of angel's wings. And I want you to see yourself laying down in that lounge chair, made with angel's wings. And any aches or pains or body difficulties you're having, as the angel's wings touch them, they just dissipate and go away. And you're at peace and you're one with your Creator. Now off in the distance, I want you to look off and see somebody that you found it next to impossible to forgive, or someone you're having an ongoing personality conflict with, at work maybe, or an ex-partner, or an ex-relationship. But I want you to see them walking toward you at the same time. On your right side, I want you to see either God as you understand Him, or somebody you love and respect that emulates the power of God as you understand Him. And he's walking toward you, or she's walking toward you. And as that higher power, or that emulation of that higher power, gets nearer, they glow, and it's a brilliant white glow. It's the healing light of God. And you get up out of your lounge chair. And as you get nearer the person you love and admire, that glow comes from your heart and fills your body. Now I want you, with your higher power, to turn toward that person and ask them to come too. And as they come forward, you put your arm around them in the glow encompasses all of you. And there's no more anger. There's no more fear. There's only healing. And at this time, if there's anybody else that you're having a problem with, you ask them to come forward. The more you hate them, the stronger the invitation. And you ask them to come and be a part of the light. Come and be a part of a healing energy. Come and be a part of a loving Creator. When your circle is inclusive, I want you to give one final hug. Go back to your lounge chair of angel's wings. In a moment, I'm going to ask you to take three deep cleansing breaths in through your nose and out through your mouth. In a moment, don't start yet. When you do that, then I'm going to ask you to open your eyes and you'll be refreshed and you'll be renewed. A number of you will have an uneasy feeling, and that feeling will be called peace. Don't push it away. Try to get used to it. It's peace rather than confusion. It's peace rather than anxiety. It's peace rather than fear. Take your 3 deep cleansing breaths. At the end of the 3rd breath, open your eyes. Be refreshed and renewed. How are we doing? Now, for those of you who said, I have no knowledge on how to meditate, wrong. See, I called it a relaxation exercise so you'd participate. If I would have said, I'm going to teach you meditation, you'd go, I don't need that crap. Thank you very much. I don't need that chingling and all that noise and stuff. It's a little meditation I taught you that works for anything and goes anywhere you want it to go. Reinhold Niebuhr, you had the Serenity Prayer printed out, the full thing. Reinhold Niebuhr was one of the greatest theologians, some say, of the 20th century. And he was a powerful speaker, and he was a most effective preacher. And he wrote that Serenity Prayer. One day he was coming to Chicago. And Reinhold Niebuhr was known to practice meditation 1 hour every day. And as they got in Chicago, he looked at his assistant and said, you know, tomorrow's going to be a 20-hour day. We better meditate for 2 hours. See, I would have been cutting. But he knew if you're going to work longer hours, you need more spiritual grace. He knew if it's going to be a tougher day, you got to spend a little more time in prayer and meditation. Doesn't that make sense? But why didn't we ever think of it? I hear people all the time say, you know, I just don't have time. Boy, be glad God doesn't feel that way about you. That'd be a real mess. What's it going to take to make your spiritual growth a priority in your life? 5 less minutes of sleep? That whole meditation we did took probably 6-7 minutes. Step 11, in my experience, is the least practiced step in all 12 steps. They usually, I ask for help in the morning, say thank you at night. Well, that's okay when you're new. That's what they tell you to do. But what happens when you're used? What happens when you've been doing this for a while and that isn't sufficient? All that means is you're not willing to grow along spiritual lines. And step 11 is the greatest step stool you're ever going to find, but it's useless if you don't practice it. It's like sitting at home wishing you had cable and not picking up the phone. A lot of us do that, don't we? What do you got to lose? What do you got to lose by actually participating in your own spiritual recovery? Well, you got a lot to lose. A lot of old ideas, a lot of fears, a lot of things you've been proclaiming all your life. You know, got me to the point of where, I mean no offense by this, but when people talked to me about God when I was new, I would say, you talk about your God, you bring him down here and I'll beat the sheet off of him. I wasn't trying to be cute. I was angry. And then years later doing this stuff, I get to hang out with him every day. In fact, the God that I've learned about, the worse you've been, the more he loves you. Oh, that's amazing. You've been really rotten. Excellent. We're glad you're here. It's what AA is. Oh, I've been to jail 42 times. Oh, you're wonderful. God bless you, God. Well, I've abandoned everybody I ever loved. We love you. It's true. I mean, if he's going to cast away the worst, what good is he? If your God's going to cast away the worst, what good is that God? My God welcomes the worst and invites us all in. That way there's no competition anymore about who's the worst. Just know this, that after I got the call to ministry, it was such a powerful spiritual awakening, I didn't change my path for a long time. About 6 months later, thought crossed my mind, Ed, what if God made a mistake here? You know, what if God made a mistake and you got it all wrong? Because this is too important, you know, being a pastor and doing that stuff. And I said a selfish prayer. I said, God, if I'm supposed to be a pastor, I need you to let me know. Unequivocally, I'll do whatever you want me to do, but I need to know. And I went to my Life Recovery Bible over there, and I opened to a place called 1 Timothy. It's in the first chapter. And I'm certainly not a Bible expert today, and probably will never be. I'm more of an encourager, I guess. And I opened to 1 Timothy, which I'd never read, and my eyes fell on how grateful I am to God who granted me and appointed me to His service. A guy who used to be a blasphemer and hunted his children down and harmed them in every way. Who better to be a prime example of God's love and forgiveness than one of the worst sinners of them all? Who better to show God's tremendous love, mercy, and forgiveness than one of the worst sinners of them all? I've never had to look it up again. Because you know what? That's what you told me here. You told me we don't care where you've been, and the worse it is, the more we love you. That's just the way this operates. And I'm not talking about it's got to be worse if you go to jail and if you go that. Some of the worst stories I've ever heard are from house stay-at-home housewives and what they go through mentally. Alcoholic and non-alcoholic, you know? Some of the worst stories I've ever heard, some of the worst thoughts and some of the anger. So it's not about that. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God as I understand Him. Praying only for knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry that out. What'd I just tell you? I just told you that my job is to do His job. What's His will for me? I promise you it isn't to insult everybody that comes in contact with me. What's His will for me? I promise you it isn't to steal things and when I'm overpaid at the counter at the grocery store to not return the change. That is not His will for me. What is His will for me? To reduce somebody to tears because of these vicious and mean statements? I think His will for me is when I'm walking out in the street and I see a lost, lonely person, like I used to be, take a minute and saying, hi, how are you? You doing okay? I'm Ed. What's your name? Not serving him up any spiritual pie. Just serving him up another human being who genuinely cares about another one. That's God's will for me. And if I keep that in mind, and if I practice that the best I can, I find a peace and a sense of belonging and a sense of oneness with this universe that I am not articulate enough to describe. Wish I could. I've had wonderful things happen to me since I've really decided to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And I'm not talking about so much being in the ministry, because you don't have to be in the ministry to turn your will and your life over to God, because in reality, you are in the ministry. You're in the ministry of what works or what doesn't work. You're in the ministry of picking sick people up and helping them walk again. See families that were totally torn apart become whole and new again. We're all ministries. We're ministers. We're ministers of a better life. I've been offered it for free, and I offer it to you for free. What do I got to believe? You just got to believe better than what you're believing now. Come on. Come on. Come to a meeting. Come to a meeting. You don't have a ride, I'll be right there. Where are you at? Be inconvenienced is God's will. Step out of your familiar is God's will. 3 o'clock in the morning when somebody called, and I wanted to share this. I love Bob and these guys that do the CDs and tapes. I was one of those for some years that really didn't like them much. I felt like, well, they're kind of making money off A&A is what I thought. They used to ask if they'd tape, and then they no longer ask and things like that. They'd do annoying things, I remember. They had the reel-to-reel. That was okay. Then they got these new cassette tapes in, but they didn't have auto-reverse. And you'd be in your talk, and you'd just be so moved by what you're saying, and the tape would go. And I was just hungry, I guess. I couldn't help but I'd say, and that, my friends, is the secret to life and sobriety. Good night now. I could just see her in the car. What the heck? We just, you know. But I had a little burr in my saddle about this and that. And when I came to Davenport, Iowa, after my wonderful divorce, it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. The phone rang 5 times. Somebody hung up. Every time I'd answer the phone, 2 guesses who I thought it was, somebody trying to help me. And the 5th time they called, I picked up the phone and said, "Who is this?" And this little voice said, "Is this Ed M. that talks in AA?" And I said, "Yeah, who's this?" And she told me her name. And she said, I'm sorry I'm calling so late. I'm 5 years sober, and I'm sitting here with a gun in my lap. I just heard your tape. Would you be kind enough to talk to me?" I said, "Oh, sweetie, we'll talk as long as you need to talk. What do you need to talk about?" From that day to this, I celebrate the CDs. It helps carry on the conversation. And I'm grateful for that. I rarely tell that story, and I was down in Florida last year, and it came across my mind to tell that. And in the reception line, a little gal came up to me and said, from 1988, and said, "I'm sure glad you answer your phone at night. Thank you." Step 12. What are you doing to improve somebody's life? Hard question, isn't it? It's so easy to get wrapped up in our own nonsense. What are you doing to make somebody's life better? One of the ways we shared before in that living amends is just to lift people up. It takes nothing to be kind and courteous. It takes nothing to be uplifting. I remember when I was went down to Memphis to take a job, and I found out the only information that was correct was the low salary they were paying me. And so I was there for a very short period of time. But in going there, I walked into this restaurant that I didn't go in a lot, but the manager was at another restaurant, and I happened to be there, and I just wanted to say bye to him because, you know, in restaurants a lot, it seems. And I told him I was leaving, and this waitress come over that I really didn't know that well. And she had tears in her eyes, and she said, "Pastor Ed, are you leaving?" And I said, "Well, yeah, honey, why?" And she started crying. She said, "Every time you come in, I feel better. I always look forward to you swinging by. And you just say something, you do something, you lift me up." And it just touched my heart. It just really touched my heart. I said before, you might be the only example anybody ever sees of your program, that you're professing. Make sure it's something you can be grateful for. That, my friends, is carrying the message and practicing these principles in all my affairs. That waitress is just as important as that newcomer. That woman in the checkout line who's checking me out needs as much courtesy as somebody I know intimately and love. On my emails, I send them all out and I simply sign it, "I love you and there's nothing you can do about it." And you see, that's the truth, because through step 12, when you're busy loving people, you can't find time to hate people. And I used to think, how can you love everybody? I remember one time I was sitting there and there was this one guy I knew, if we spent 5 minutes in the parking lot, I could help him find God, I'll tell you. And I'm driving home and I'm thinking, how can I have these thoughts? You're supposed to love everybody. Now, how can I think that? And the answer came to me that if that guy called me at 2 o'clock in the morning and said, Ed, I'm going to drink, there would be no question. I'd be right there. I loved him. I just didn't care for his actions. Big difference. That's how you can love everybody. And I can honestly assure you that if there's anybody in this room I can ever help, humanly possible, spiritually, I'll just do it. What do you owe me? Nothing, thank you. Not my job. That's between us and God. Practicing these principles in all our affairs means we actually bring a presence into wherever we go. It's up to you what kind of presence you're going to bring. We bring it into our meetings. Do we bring in whiny complaints and reasons why I'm unhappy this week and why he's still not behaving or she's not behaving and you'd drink too if you were married to her? What are you bringing? Are you bringing a sense of healing and oneness? Are you still divisive and trying to separate? What do you bring to the mix? Whenever you see somebody doing something you really don't like, it's a reflection of your own actions, either before or now. You're doing it in one way or the other, I promise you. It's like that guy that I couldn't understand why harming kids, and when he talked about compulsiveness, well, I knew that. And that's what I mean about that. Anything you dislike, you have the capability of, but I have some great news for you. If you see something good out there that just lifts you up and makes you want to be better and makes you want to be just like that, you already are. Because if you spot it, you got it. I had a little friend come up to me in Ohio some few years back, and she said, I see God in you. And I said, oh, no, sweetie, what you see is a reflection of the God in you. That's what you see. Because you couldn't see it if you don't have it. It's like when you're feeling horrible about something that's happened. That's just your goodness coming out. Doesn't mean you're a bad person if you make mistakes, especially if you feel bad. That just tells you you're a good person wanting to be better. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's a joy. That's a joy. Practice these principles in all our affairs. I've been very blessed that I've been able to do that in a lot of different ways and do things I didn't dream possible. A few years ago, my nephew and his wife had a baby. She had something to do with it, I don't remember. But they're a great couple, and I love them both very much. And they had a little baby, and they knew it was going to have heart problems. And the baby was born, and they called me up and said, would you baptize the baby? And I said, oh, I'd be honored to. And it was about 100 miles away. I went up and I baptized the baby. And I got about halfway home and my nephew called me. And I said, you okay? And said, no, the surgeons just come in and said, the baby's condition is far worse than what they thought. And they want us to turn off the machines. Can you come back? Sure. Did I want to go back? No. But you've told me that if I'm carrying this message in all my affairs and practicing these principles, when someone's hurting, I am responsible. I went around and I went back and they turned off the machines. And the hospital was wonderful. They let them say goodbye to the baby. They were just so healing and wonderful. And they wanted to charge them $800 to transport the baby back to Iowa. And I said, look, I'm a pastor in the church here, and those kids didn't have any money, and I happened to know the undertaker, and he was great, and gave me a deal that was able to bury that little girl. And I was at the hospital there, and my nephew said, Uncle Eddie, would you do the funeral? And I said, sure, I'd be honored to. And everything in me said, I can't, hurts too bad, can't. That's when you ask God to do for you what you cannot do for yourself. They agreed to let me pick up the baby. I went to this place. It was this brick place a block place. I went to the door and I said, "Hi, I'm here to collect the Bruce baby." And they handed me the baby in a blanket. A baby in a blanket. And I had 200 miles to drive home. So I carried her the best I could. And I took her to the funeral. And I knew beyond a doubt that I did not have the capability to go through with this. So I relied upon God. Everybody tells me that funeral was wonderful. I don't remember it personally because it was too difficult. But what I found is these steps worked in order, helped me to walk through the most difficult things you can ever imagine in life. And God's grace shines through in the worst of situations. The only thing I asked of my nephew is he was really mad at God, and I said, "You know, TJ, I just want you to do one thing for me. Suspend your anger about God. Just don't be angry about him, because I don't believe God did this. I believe life happens, and something happened. But God didn't do this." I didn't know if it really registered until they had their little baby girl. And TJ called me and said, "Ed, Uncle Ed, can you baptize my daughter?" And I said, "I'd be honored to." And they came to my church, and we celebrated a wonderful new baby, and I did a baptism. We are charged with such an important task here, and it gets poo-pooed. It shouldn't get poo-pooed. We're in charge. We've been given the greatest gift of all. We can give new life to people. I don't get the ignorance of people today. I don't understand it. I'd say to people, "Can you heal yourselves? How many here can heal themselves?" Everybody goes. And I say, "Cut yourself. See what happens in 3 days. Duh. Another gift that God gave us that we don't claim. Amazing, isn't it? Cut yourself. Heals itself. That's our gifts. And the gifts are many, and with this 12 steps and as we go along this journey, what I found is we're about lifting people up, and we're about doing the best we can. And I can also tell you from the bottom of my heart that I understand I know very little about what these 12 steps have to offer, because I'm just beginning. But what I do know is the journey is exciting enough, and the people I meet along the way are exciting enough, that I just hope next time through I get to see you. I think we're about out of time. No, we're not. We got a few more minutes. I'll finish up with some questions, okay? We don't have many. Forgive someone, help you forgive yourself for doing the same thing. I think we've kind of talked about that, especially in the Lord's Prayer. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. You have no right not to forgive you. You just don't have a right. Ooh, and we got skinny folded ones. We like those. How do you work a problem, any problem, through the steps? Excellent question. You don't work them. You surrender them and you keep going and you apply these steps in your life. There's an interesting line in the big book. It says, once the spiritual malady is addressed, the mental and physical take care of themselves. I'll repeat that. Once the spiritual malady is addressed, the mental and physical take care of themselves. See, the spirituality must come first and be addressed. I don't know about you, but I thought, well, as soon as I get feeling better and get my head together, I'll talk about that God stuff. Thanks very much. Just the opposite of what I'm told to do. God's got to come first. Spirituality's got to come first. And if you're working on it, it ain't going to get solved. When you surrender it, it'll disappear. Promise you. Some good questions. Thank you so much for your honesty. And how do you work this program around those who do not have a program? Well, if I'm working my program, I'm not taking their inventory, so how would I know that information? Why would that even be pertinent? The only way it would be pertinent is my program's conditioned on how you're treating me. Thank you very much. Has nothing to do with that. A few years ago, I was at a church, and I got called into the office. And I loved this church, and I loved everybody in it. And the SPRC, the head of the student, our staff parish relations committee, called me into the room and said, Ed, we don't want you in this church anymore. You're a thief. And I said, excuse me? They said, we want you out of this church by tomorrow morning. You're a thief. And he compared me to an ex-president that I wasn't pleased about. And I was shattered. Shook my faith to the core. Do you know what I heard myself saying to those guys? Over and over again, with tears streaming down my face, I have no idea why this is happening, but I need to tell you both that I love you very much. If I said that once, I said it 50 times, and I meant it every single time. I went home and I called my sponsor. And he said, Ed, why would they do that? Even if you did, why would they handle it that way? I said, I don't know. But I mean, my foundation was just rocked. And by the next morning, Clancy told me something that holds me in good stead. If you haven't done anything wrong, there's nothing to defend. It's good information. And I hadn't done anything wrong, and I called him up and I said, you know what? I'm not going anywhere. And if you guys want to replace me, then you bring me up on charges, and let's go. Let's do what we got to do. Within 2 weeks, that gentleman came back to me and said, Ed, there's been a terrible mistake. No, he didn't use mistake because they talked to the lawyer. I'm sorry about the terrible inconvenience. That was the word. I'm sorry about the terrible inconvenience, but we won't be pursuing anything on our end. You know what being an example of step 12 is? Simply saying, thank you. Not, I told you so, see that, blah, 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 blah. Thank you. I'm in the supermarket last year, year before. Guy who made all those charges came by. And he said, Ed, how are you? And I said, oh, good, how are you? It's good. He said, hey, can we have lunch together? I said, sure, I'd love to. You know why? I don't keep score. We went to lunch, and halfway through lunch, he said, you know that episode that we had a few years ago? And I said, yeah. He said, and he's not a member of the programs that I know, but he said, I really need to make amends to you. I got some bad information and acted way too quickly, and I know it really devastated you. And I said, no, Bob, what devastated me is I really love you, and I love Dale. And it was the charges coming from you that devastated me, not the charges, because I love and respect you. And I said, you've just proved I got good judgment because I love and respect you even more now. And he said, what can I do, Ed, to make this right between us? I said, you've already done it. There's no more need to be done. Freedom. Everybody talks about freedom. That's freedom. Nobody owns me anymore because the way I was treated yesterday or when I was a kid, or what people might say about me disparagingly, they don't own me. God does. I turn myself in every day. I surrender. Here you go. Hands up. I'm done. And if you have trouble, there's been a lot of people talk, as we talk today about surrender. What helped me a great deal is when I really just started surrendering rather than processing and working through it and getting all the facts together, is I would simply raise it up. And when I'd come down, my hands would be empty. And sometimes I had to raise it up four or five times. but my hands have come down empty. And that's how I surrender it. Now, is this meant to be that you're ignorant? No. It means that when you get on the right track, at least in my experience, you'll experience things you could have never imagined. I was telling my friend Joyce about an incident that I don't share a lot of times. I don't know if I've ever shared it on tape, but we're going to share it now. I have a dear friend, Patty. Patty is a wonderful waitress that's been a friend of mine for years, and I just love her. She's got the worst broken picker of any woman I've ever seen. You know, if there's a loser within 30 miles, she's in love with him. And last one was a good member of AA. But I love Patty. Patty and I have always had this mutual respect and love. And I walked in one day. Now remember, 86, 87, 88 says that what used to be a hunch or occasional inspiration will gradually become a working part of the mind. You remember that? I walk into Patty one day. Patty comes up to me and she has a frown on her face. I said, "Are you okay, honey?" She said, "You know, Pastor Ed, I got the flu or something. I'm just not feeling well." And this sense come over me. I said, "You need to go to the hospital right now." And she said, "What?" And I said, "No, right now." And I'm animated. And I'm forceful. Patty's never seen this before. And I call her boss over. I said, "Patty needs to go to the hospital now." And I'm looking accusatory at Tony. If he doesn't get her to the hospital, I'm going to do something to him. And I'm just adamant about this. I'm thinking, what do I know? I don't know. But I took her to the hospital, and I was going up north to speak at an AA meeting. Coming back, I got a call from Patty. She said, "Pastor Ed, would you come and pray for me before they take me into surgery? I guess I have a huge cyst on my ovaries, and it's leaking. And they got to get in there and get it out because it's poisoning my system." It was so bad, her recovery, she laid flat for 6 weeks. They would not allow her to move. Short time thereafter, the same host I had said, "Hey, want to go to a strip club?" His girlfriend. We're up there talking. He said, "You know, my girlfriend's been sick for the last week." And I went, "Really?" In the same sense, I said, "I got to go talk to her." Went and talked to her. In the same sense come over me. I said, "You got to go to the hospital right now." And she looked at me and I told her about Patty. I said, "I'm no doctor. I don't know anything. But I know you need to go to the doctor right now." And I said, "Go to the hospital." She said, "I was just there yesterday." And she said, "I don't care." Butch M. from Barry was with me on this. And I said, "You need to go right now." And she said, "I was at the hospital yesterday. They told me not to come back for a week." I said, "You go there and you raise whatever cane you got to get a blood test." Oh, no. What do I know about blood tests? Well, that's what I'm telling her. She goes, and I get a call 2 hours later that they're rushing her into surgery. Blood test showed that her appendix was rupturing and leaking into her system. She was only in the hospital for 3 weeks afterwards. And I walked in the next day, and she said, "My Savior." And I said, "Oh, don't go that far, Will." And Butch would come down, and we'd talk, and people come down, and I'd talk. And I'd always say, "Isn't it great that God gave me that information? Isn't it great that God gave me that information?" And then one day, Butch comes down, and he visits with me and spends the weekend, and we talk. And it dawned on me, what would have happened if I hadn't paid attention to the information? Patty wouldn't be here anymore. Denny wouldn't be here anymore. Expect these steps to work. If you work them in order, you're going to get spiritual gifts better than you ever have. Now, that hasn't happened since. And if you're feeling bad, I can't diagnose you. And it's a bit much for me, actually, so I hope it doesn't happen again. But if it does, I will follow because lives hang in the midst. I have just been delighted to be here with you. I don't really want to go home. I'd like to hang out for a few more days and talk, and I'm delighted to see that you came here. My prayer is that you got something that's useful to you. My prayer is that you got something that can help find the peace that I think we all deserve. With that, I'll thank you for coming. And Joyce, you got any announcements? Thank you very much.
Thank you, buddy.